Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants, with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is TortureCast.
Welcome, everybody, to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. My name is Willie Dills. This is episode number 98, and it is time to look back on the magical, mystical ride that was 2015, a ride that took us firmly into second place and out of the playoffs. It could have been worse. Could have been third place. Could have been fourth place. Could have been fifth place. But it was second place.
That was Colorado in the division.
That's a good point. Colorado in the division, it's really, really hard to finish in fifth place. If that was Ben Lee, one of my co-hosts, welcome Ben to the show.
Still reigning champs, son. Still reigning champs.
Yeah. That is a damn good point. And then, of course, we got Chad King here as well. What's up, dude?
Dude, I should have gone to Vegas. I'm just saying.
Should have gone to Vegas?
February. Should have gone to Vegas.
There's lots of reasons to go to Vegas.
I'll elaborate on that.
All right. So we're not going to do like a normal structured show where we talk about, you know, armchair manager decisions and all that kind of stuff. We're just going to kind of talk about
it all. Season. Seems like a really relevant topic right now, we may have to keep that.
When we get to the end, we're just going to slightly alter that segment a little bit. But this was some odd year bullshit, right? I mean, what could we do? The odds were stacked against us. The odd year was stacked against us, right?
Yeah.
Like, we had no chance from the beginning.
No. Astrology, numbers, random chance, just dictated it.
Mercury, the astrologer probably can tell us exactly what went wrong, you know.
Well,
Donald Trump running for president, whatever.
So here's what it takes for the Giants not to make the World Series, right? We have to have Hunter Pence suddenly become a guy who plays like a third of the season out of nowhere. Tops. After being like the Iron Man of Iron Men for the last, you know,
we have to have an enemy pitcher break Hunter Pence's arm.
Yeah. We have to have that happen. Then we have to have the Dodgers like have two really amazing guys not get injured pretty much all year. And even the rest of their starting rotation was kind of a merry-go-round of garbage. They still did always have, you know, at the top two insanely good starting pitchers. And of course, we also had to have some surprises to knock us out of wild card contention. Like, I don't know, the Chicago Cubs being in the playoffs.
I feel like with Theo Epstein around, it's not 100% a surprise, but it is weird.
It is weird.
It's weird, man. Yeah. So there's some interesting matchups this season. This is not the normal. There's some names, some returning names that we're used to seeing in the playoffs. And then there's some guys that are a little bit new to the scene. So this is going to be, as a Giants fan, I normally, when we don't make the playoffs, I just turn that shit off, right? I don't really care until like the World Series. I kind of keep an eye on what's going on just for whatever, just for fun. But for the most part, I kind of turn it off and I start waiting for like, or I start paying attention to football. Of course, this year, that's the worst thing I could be doing. Or start waiting for basketball, which is probably the best thing I could be doing. But how do you guys like? So Ben, what do you do once the Giants are? I know you just like baseball as a whole, so you probably pay close attention to the playoffs no matter what, right?
I'm sorry, what? Golden State's starting its preseason right now. What?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
grab your attention.
No, I mean, I do and I don't, just because it's a lot to keep up with. Like, if I have the opportunity to catch a game, or if I like, you know, pop one on while I'm at work and try not to watch it because then I'll get in trouble, but listen to the, you know, audio of the game or whatever. I like to at least have an idea, just because, I don't know, playoffs are always exciting, right? That's the whole reason that Americans love playoffs. Like, no, we can't just have whoever has the best record win. We got to have them fight. It's not enough fighting. Needs more fighting in America. So, I mean, the idea that all of a sudden, you know, it's like, well, you remember all those 30 teams that you could pretty reliably watch every day? 20 of them are gone now.
Mm-hmm.
See how you like that. And it's like, it does get more exciting. It's just, you know, there's always certain matchups that you're going to be way more invested or interested in others. Like, I want to see DeGrom versus Greinke or Syndergaard versus Kershaw. Like, Mets at Dodgers is going to be really interesting, I think. But stuff like that, you know, it's matchups and it's which teams and it at first. When it gets down to the end, yeah, sure, I'm going to be like, oh, World Series time. All right, who made it? But, I mean, like, in the early stages, you're sort of, like, more curious about the results than you are about watching
stories. Yeah, too. I get that. Chad, you probably know, like, about this, too, and this is kind of a weird thing, but, you know, the World Series, when the Giants were in it, a lot of people talked about how the ratings were so low, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that just baseball in general is a very regional thing. It's not like the Super Bowl where everybody watches it no matter what, because
everybody's a fan of a football team that doesn't live near them unless you're in San Francisco or Oakland and you're stuck. But
well, yeah, but I mean, it's just that is the
Chicago.
One game
Chicago is also quite stuck.
Katy Perry at halftime. You got all, you know, I mean, you got all this stuff.
I mean, you got Left Shark featuring Katy Perry at halftime.
Left Shark will be actually headlining it next year. But I mean, like, is there a way, Chad, do you think, to change that? Should people care about the playoffs that aren't in the cities that these teams are from?
You know, it brings back memories of, you know, Atlanta, their stadium. You know, they won, what, 10 divisions in a row, division titles in a row?
Yeah, they were a fixture. And
it was pretty funny to see their playoff series, even the division, even the NLCS, and see, you know, the top tiers of their stadium completely empty. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would never see that here in San Francisco. I mean, they've sold out, what, 300, 400 straight games or whatever, let alone the playoffs.
By whatever means, but yes.
Yeah, by whatever means, you know. They might have fudged the numbers a little bit, but
seats were sold. The resellers did, but, you know, it's a separate queue. But, I mean, the purchasing power and the interest and the demand is absolutely there in this area.
Yeah, you cannot compare baseball to football because what you just said right there, Willie, it's one game. For football. For baseball, it's at least four in a series. It might be more. And it just dilutes the audience. So I think that's, you know, Game 7 actually had a pretty good rating last year.
Obviously.
Not as much as the Super Bowl, of course. But
yeah, but as soon as you get to a Game 5, a Game 6, a Game 7, that's when it gets lucrative for everyone involved.
It makes sense. And if you look at what Major League Baseball and, well, I should say the advertisers and the networks put forth in their schedule today, they announced the TV schedule. The Mets and the Dodgers grab both primetime slots for their first two games. And for them to grab both of them, it tells you that they looked at the demographics and they're like, New York, Los Angeles, boom. That's what we're doing.
Right. Now, I mean, it does help that they're the only game that's going to be on the West Coast, too.
Well, that's true, too. So they're going to get a little bit of bi-coastal kind of.
So there's
involved.
But because I mean, that's what
but it is, but it is New York versus right? LA, it's
but it is, it's, but it is two of the biggest matchup. Markets,
yeah,
I agree. No, and I mean, there is a vested interest
like
in saying, oh, look,
Eastern time,
sure is convenient, but because I mean, nobody's going to start a game at 9 p.m. Eastern, you know, on the East Coast,
no,
but at the same time, given the opportunity to do that and say, well, I mean, our primetime slots are going to be sharing the Cardinals, who are the Cardinals, and the Mets and Dodgers. That's a pretty solid lineup, and it's when you can do it in a way where it makes sense regionally by time and nationally by time. I basically imagine somebody at TBS like clapping their hands all the way to the bank.
You know, I think there's something to be said too for the fact that because it's one game, the media puts so much more into that one game.
So
and they spread that all out.
There's 5 days of buildup. There's practices beforehand.
Well, there's 2 weeks of friggin' buildup. I mean, there's, you know, it's insane. Like, they stop for two weeks before the Super Bowl. Yeah.
When they
spread everything out over
general psychology,
a bunch of 7-game series, it's really tough to put the amount of effort that they put into one game. So obviously you're not going to generate
the storylines are easier to locate and develop in a way because you watch them grow over time. And I think that's true with basketball in a big way and with hockey to some extent as well. But with the Super Bowl, what you do is you ask a question and you just let it hang there for 2 weeks.
Yeah,
and then you create a storyline out of teams desperately trying to answer it. And so the way that the drama builds is very different in both cases, but the coverage is manageable with the Super Bowl. You go, oh, Super Bowl's coming, or you go, football playoffs are coming. now I get to listen to 1 week of everybody asking whether or not this team is going to be able to figure out the, you know, star defender on this team. And it's the same thing. So if you want to get caught up on the latest news, you find out what three rumors have come up this week or what two things were seen at the latest practice. And otherwise, you're just rehashing everything from the last
week. God, I'm bored talking about anything but Giants baseball right now. Holy shit.
Hey, since we're
we're talking about other teams and I instantly don't want to watch it.
I've been sick, so I've been trying not to drink anything. This is as close as I get to just passing out.
Yeah,
so.
I don't have that problem. Since we're freeballing it right now, I wanted to bring up the whole wild card issue. We've talked about this in years past.
Sure.
And obviously the Giants, you know, you have those rare examples like in 1993, they won 103 games and they don't make the playoffs because they finished one game behind the Atlanta Braves. God yes. damn it, you Colorado Rockies. Couldn't even beat the Braves one freaking time out of 12. But I've totally moved past that.
I'm sure. Absolutely.
This year, you know, the Giants obviously and the Royals got into the World Series last year on the wild card, and it was yep. fantastic. And so the Giants have no complaints about the wild card right now. Now, if you're a Pittsburgh Pirate or Chicago Cubs fan, you're loaded in an incredible division of the National League Central, and your division winner has 100 wins this year. Pirates have 97 wins. The Cubs have 96. That, in almost any year, I don't think there's been correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think there's been a wild card with that many wins, let alone two. And so,
yeah, two over 96. I can't even imagine that.
What you're facing right now is the fact that at least a 96 team win or win team is going to be out in a couple of nights
after one game.
Yeah. After one game.
At the same time, though, you also can turn around and say neither of these 90 win teams missed the postseason because the wild card was expanded. So
no, you're very right about that, because if we had the old divisional system, you know,
they're both out. Yeah. They're both out, and the Dodgers are in.
Yeah,
the Dodgers did not have 90
about
wins.
Think about when it was literally two leagues, and then just the top guy got in. That was it. Like
this is
lots of good
teams
never got in.
I mean, yeah. Do you think that? You know, I've heard rumors, and it's not going to happen anytime soon.
I take that back. The Dodgers did have 92 wins. Credit where it's due, and it hurts me to say that. Carry on.
Do you think that baseball, because if this happens more than once, where you have 96, 95, 97 win teams getting eliminated after one game, because clearly they're the best three teams in baseball, essentially, right?
Sure. If you just go by regular season win totals.
Out of 10. And I know, you know, you play different teams, different divisions, different strengths, all that stuff. But point being, do you think that there's ever going to be a reason where baseball is going to sit back and at least look at going back to the old school system where you keep obviously a lot of playoff teams where we have 10 right now? They may expand it to, let's say, 12 teams and just take the top 12 out of 30. Top 10 out of 30, top 8 out of 30.
They've talked about doing this in basketball, and I think in basketball it makes more sense because of the fact
they have
the
those
Western
weird
division,
divisions. Yeah.
The Western division has been so dominant for so long that they got these teams that are under 500. Yeah,
they have division winners that are like way worse than. Yeah,
and the conference winners mean like it's weird. It's like, or sorry, the division winners division like have winners, some weird. Thing that actually still matters, even though no one ever talks about it, but it still kind of matters somehow.
Yeah, and they abolished that. Next year, they're going to
just straight
seeding.
But I can't really see baseball doing that just because, you know, the way the playoffs are structured, it's a little different than and you don't have an AL and NL being so massively different in power level. If it were to get that way after, say, 10, 12 years, and, you know, the AL is just always dominating or the NL is, maybe you start talking about it. But I think at this point, I think things are okay as they stand. I think it would be worse. I would be sadder if the Cubs just weren't in at all with 96 as I was with 103. And, you know.
Well, I think of it this way. I mean, if you look at the top five teams, the Dodgers are essentially in fifth place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or sorry, they're in fourth place. The Mets are in fifth place. So what if they did transition to a system in which the bottom two teams played for the wild card? In this case,
I mean,
it would be the
I could see
the
that. Yeah, I could see essentially getting
because
rid of this whole division
thing. That's
rewarding. And just going top
the Mets or the Pirates and the Cubs for having a vastly superior record to both the Dodgers and the Mets.
Yeah, so you say top five teams from each league get in,
the bottom
four and five they play each other, and then one, two, and three get seeded. I could see something like that. That'd be fine with
me. The only concern you run into there is just whether or not, like, are you saying cut division winners entirely and it's just strictly
overall
record?
Which I do
that,
like,
that's, Well, that's yeah. that's a major scheduling shakeup. That's the only reason.
Well, you can still schedule within divisions.
Well, but no, because if you schedule within divisions, though, but you don't make winning your division matter the same way.
Do you remember years ago we had the – right now we went back to the unbalanced division schedule, meaning you play your own division more than
any other division. Yeah.
But we had a period of time where we played – all teams played every team equally. And that really muddled the waters in terms of, you know, what does winning your division mean when you play all of the teams equally?
Right.
So but I mean that's the opposite schedule. I think that would be a legitimate way to see
that's what I'm saying is that's the double flip is we went from win your division but you play everybody equally to overload your division, and then if you were to say, you know, so you'd have to return to that balanced schedule, I think, because when you muddy things up like that, you create the level playing field. Yeah. It's just, you know, you don't want to set it up in the situation where somebody is playing the Rockies an inordinate amount number of towers, somebody's
Atlanta Braves,
or somebody
but think about what it feels like.
Atlanta playing Philadelphia an inordinate number of times, and suddenly Atlanta jumps ahead in the play. You know, it's you just want to make sure you're watching out for that. But otherwise, I mean, you know, it's no different from the approach that, you know, like a lot of other major sports like soccer, except out in the U.S. Oh my God, takes you know. Soccer has a way.
Think about what it's like to be in a division where you never have a chance, no matter how good you are, and that's happened for a long time.
Oh yeah,
like the Boston Red Sox like never got in because of the Yankees for a long time, and then like things changed over time. But there was a long period of time, and then like the other teams in that division were like, "Well, what the hell, man? How are we supposed to compete with both of these teams who are just like shelling out massive amounts of money?" But if you could just say, "All right, well, we just win as many games as we can, and then that gives us a good chance to get in," then that changes how all the teams kind of perceive where they are. Because if you think about like Tampa Bay, what's the point in even trying? Like, we don't draw anyway. So our strategy is to what? Like every now and then somehow sneak together a team of a bunch of talented youngsters and hope to like make something happen. And that's not very good for that franchise, you know?
Although it's kind of worked for them so far, but not in a good way.
Once.
Yeah.
Exactly. There you go. It worked once.
Oh, wait, Joe Madden's managing the Cubs, too.
Cubs, hey, no.
By the way, before we move on to, like, the Giants, which we should get to, Matt Williams was fired.
Yes.
Yep. The entire Nationals coaching staff was fired.
Pretty much. Any of these,
coaching staff. So I haven't looked at this. Do you remember when the last defending, if you want to call it defending, they don't really defend their title, but
they're defending division champion.
No. Defending manager of the year is fired.
Oh. Ooh.
Yeah. No. That's a weird thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm gonna guess it was a Yankees manager.
And even if that did happen, I bet you $1 million they had a losing record. He did not have a losing record this year.
Right.
No, he finished in second place behind the New York Mets with 83-79. But this is like, you know,
It's relative.
It's not about it's not about the record.
It's not about the record. The
clubhouse.
Super poisonous clubhouse.
Yeah, exactly. That's what.
But the clubhouse is volatile as hell. We saw what happened in it. And,
that was I think the tipping point. Like, I think they probably would have been considering it anyway. Sure, and things were not good, as any Nats beat reporter probably would have kind of like hedged to suggest. But then Papelbon and Harper pretty much killed it for the entire.
Yeah, sure. But okay. But here's the thing, though. Whether like that happened or not, I think a team as stacked as they are should not be finishing 83-79. You know what I mean? Like, that's, I think that has a lot to do with it as well. I know clubhouse stuff matters, but winning record or no,
it's Padres level.
You're kind of regressing as the Nationals right now after like being the favorite and, you know, holding back a pitcher because we thought we were so good that we could still cruise in there even with that, to now being like, well, are we going to, like, Toronto is now the beast? The Mets are now like the beast in our division, and where are we? Like, are we even going to be the favorites?
I watched the whole section on High Heat on MLB.TV or MLB TV with Chris Russo today, and they had one of the beat writers from the Nationals on, and he actually wrote a book after he observed the first half, and then wrote the second half of that book consistently, like every week he would release a chapter as the second half went on. It was really unique way of releasing a book. And so they had him on today and they were asking him, so was it one nail in the coffin? Was it one event, or was it just a cacophony of things? And it really was that latter answer. It was,
of course,
it really did start with last year against the Giants. and his mismanagement of
the Jordan Zimmerman.
Jordan Zimmerman, absolutely. Right? Well,
one big move, but a bunch of all.
Like, but one big move that called your attention to all of the other misfirings.
That kind of just started it, right? And then going into this season, you have players losing confidence, that kind of thing. But there was a big series in July against the Mets in which the Mets swept them. And in every game, it was very close. And Mets had one or two walk-offs that series. Every game was close. And your two bullpen guys, your closer guys, your setup and your closers, Drew Storen and your newly acquired Jonathan Papelbon, didn't pitch one single pitch in those three games. And every single game, they were questioning him, why didn't you pitch? Well, we were behind by a run. Well, we don't use a reliever on the
traditional
road.
Traditional closer. Kind of stuff, right? And
And then you had a few other incidents, playoffs, and then, of course, it blew up with the whole, Papelbon Harper thing. And so,
I mean, obviously, they aren't the cause of a lot of this, but they attracted so much instant major negative press that it sort of brought a lot to light in a hurry for people that hadn't been paying attention, I think.
So I think it was just a cancer in the clubhouse. Unfortunately, we all love Matt Williams. He was a hell of a player, but he's very hard-nosed, strong-headed, and I think that might have been a contributing factor to his downfall in Washington because he just didn't communicate well with the players. That at least that's what's coming out from the press. Yeah.
How do you feel about him landing with the Giants in some role?
I was thinking about that today. In fact, no one has actually talked about it. I haven't read anything about it, but I was thinking
about that. I mean, he was our third base coach at one point.
No, right? Grant did.
Huh?
Grant brought that one up.
Oh, really? I haven't read that.
Okay. He was our third base coach, right, for a period of time? Or was it – he was like a base coach for us, wasn't he? I can't even remember now.
No, I don't think so. He was for
– oh, was he a third base coach for the Diamondbacks or something?
Yeah, Diamondbacks.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I do remember him being a third base coach.
I don't think he ever – I think he started his coaching career with the Diamondbacks, and that was when we kind of all – like, basically coaching career.
Because he moved to them at the end of his career, and it's a similar thing like you see with like a guy like Sean Dunston or something.
Yeah, but I think the Giants – on the surface, would love to have him, but in the front office, no, they're not going to touch that.
He's still a very well-beloved guy in Giants history.
Yeah, but they're going to have to shove him back into like some really insignificant.
Like he either goes to the minor leagues or he like gets the special consultant or a spring training instructional or something.
Yeah, like how do we
how do we try and like have the guy around and help the dude out,
but not screw our team?
Getting the fog of bullpen death to rub off on us. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And not in a literal actual bullpen death sense, but that fog is there on him for at least a little bit.
I like Matt Williams a lot. I just don't think he's the guy who should be making all the decisions. That's he's a good hitter, good baseball coach. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he needs a lot more practice managing and he needs to do that somewhere else.
I don't think he should practice managing at all. I think he should give managing up completely.
All right. So
based on what he's done so far, you're probably right.
I'm going to take this opportunity to gloat a little bit.
Okay.
Because it's rare that I can do this because my fantasy football team is failing so miserably.
Well, you can gloat about cornhole. We know that.
Oh, well, that's different.
That did happen.
By the way, a lot of my friends didn't believe that was actually a sport. They're like, I don't know how to call it
a sport. It's like a backyard hobby.
Well,
you could probably make a sport out of it. In the sense that you can make a sport out of anything that has a score. Yeah,
game.
They didn't believe it existed at all.
Exactly.
Like you just made up this thing.
Yeah.
There it is.
Oh, you're good at cornholing. It's like, well, yeah.
Yes, and then they immediately pulled a shirt up over their heads and turned into an MTP in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah. I need TP for my bunghole. No, it was – okay, so last year, Giants made – the playoffs as a wild card. And we had our season preview. And we all made our predictions. And I nailed it at 88. You guys remember that, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. That is the thing.
So this year, I just went back just now as we were talking to episode 82, our season preview. And I have all of our fortune cookies here. And I'm going to read them off for you.
All right. I'm going to guess that I bid high.
Okay. I'm going to guess that I hedged and leaned high this time around.
What do you think you predicted back in
I think I predicted something like 88.
Very close. You predicted 87.
Okay.
What about you, Ben?
I was actually thinking I had said 87.
88.
Huh. There you go, Willie.
So we just flip-flopped.
Clearly, we think
we guessed each other's. Yeah.
Obviously, okay. I think about Willie more than myself on a regular basis. So,
so Eric was the most optimistic at 92.
Okay.
Which, with the lineup that we had, reasonable.
Right, right.
If everybody's healthy.
With the lineup that we ended up with, laughable.
Yeah.
Well, no, and oh, I will rewind to 2012 when we had our season preview with Giants Pod at what was it called then, that restaurant?
What, the Publica?
I think it was still Chop House at that point. Was it something else?
Well, the restaurant AT&T, whatever it was.
No, it was already Public House by then, I think.
Well,
I want to say.
I thought it was Public House already.
By then, yeah.
Perhaps it was. And so, anyway, I predicted 90, and the Giants won, what, 92 in 2012? So, and I remember getting a lot of flack from Thomas about that one. Going way too optimistic. Anyway, this year, drumroll please, I predicted 84.
Wow.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
That's two years in a row.
2 years running.
I've got the exact win total for the Giants. And now, of course, that did take blowing.
I'm glad you're so proud, you son of a bitch.
Blowing a three-run lead in the ninth by allowing seven unanswered runs by the Colorado Rockies.
You do realize that you predicted 84 and the Giants had to have the worst luck of all time to actually match your prediction.
Yeah, no. what's funny is that, yeah, that's what I was
It's a really
about.
Awkward gloat is what we're saying.
Exactly. Like, the whole Vegas thing. That's
like you can gloat about it and
did
also
you know
what
Vegas,
happened.
Vegas over-under for wins was at the beginning of the season?
I'll guess somewhere around what we said, like 88, 89.
88.
84 and a half.
Wow.
Interesting.
So.
No, actually, that's surprising.
If I had laid money on 84.
Yeah.
I would have been rooting that seven-run inning. But
well,
alas.
So what you're saying is you're glad you didn't go to Vegas,
You've been rooting
right?
against the Giants. Yeah,
no, that's why I was saying I should have gone to Vegas.
My buddy Max actually does this thing where he bets always against the team he wants to win so that he can root for them. But if they lose, it's still not so bad.
Yeah, it's a mixed thing. Yeah,
yeah, he hedges all of his bets.
It's like an advanced coping maneuver.
Yeah. No, but he hedges his rooting interest. On like the Dodgers and then roots for the Giants. And then if the Giants lose, he goes, "Hey, well, I made $50. And
it's not hedging your bets. You're literally hedging your rooting interests by making your bets.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's the weirdest thing, but
there's some truth to that in a way. The thing is, though, this season was a lot like going to Vegas because it starts off really exciting and all of a sudden you wake up in the middle of the hospital wondering how you got there.
Yeah.
Like 15 times.
Pretty much.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about this season.
It's the 2015 Giants, the hangover.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this season a little bit. So the Giants were underperformers, even though Chad thought that they performed exactly how they should have. But I think you can safely say the Giants underperformed by quite a bit this season. They just had too many injuries. So I want to know what your guys' takeaways are from the season. I'm not talking about, like, let's talk about, like, the good things, whatever, but just how the season felt to you. And we'll try to keep it a little short because we want to move on to some other stuff. But let's start with you, Chad. Like, just talk about this season. What do you think, like, the overall theme was? Was it, like, any takeaways at all besides like, okay, we'll think about this for next year, but just this year on its own, like, what are you going to look back on 2015 and go that's the thing that happened that I remember?
Yeah. I mean, I got to say two things. One was injuries. We talked about Hunter Pence, Angel Pagan, Matt Cain, the list goes on and on and on. Concussions with Aoki, you know, Panic's back, Belt's concussion. It just, all these little things, you know, even though not everyone missed more than 20 games, when you look up the collective absence, there's no doubt in my mind that made the difference in the division. Along with, I think, the Giants front office. And I think they've kind of heard they've heeded the call. And I hope that, you know, they correct this in the offseason. But they relied on quantity over quality in terms of starting pitching. They said, we have 7 or 8 starters this year. We're going to be fine because whoever goes down, we're going to plug someone else back in.
Or else somebody will be hot at any given time.
And, you know,
completely unreliable.
That was working, actually, for most of the first half. But I think everything broke down in the second half. You know, you got
Heston, too many question marks, man.
Yeah, you had Heston coming back down to earth and you had injuries. And it didn't work out. It didn't work out. And the Giants still won 84 games. Well, it should have been 85, but point being, you know, they were maybe 5, 6, 7 games off of winning a wild card. I mean, they're only 2 games back of the AL wild card win totals, right? And so they were competitive. They were competitive. They were in the mix.
They were certainly competitive.
Yeah, you know, all mean, the way to the last, you know, 6 days of the season.
So, there are times that you hit the end of a season, you're already out of it, and you're just kind of drifting through those last, like, 2 weeks. Or there are times that you're the Philadelphia Phillies. That was so bad, I instantly got karma in my throat. But it's just raw. But, you know, it's to have that game against the Dodgers and have, you know, the first two at least mean something, I think that was given. And it, you know, we're constantly looking at it and trying to find that silver lining around a awkward season, not even necessarily a wholly bad one, even though it did feel like that towards the end. But a season that really had those moments of like we're still sort of in this, we're still sort of in this, and to have that game, that first Dodgers game this month or last month. That just said, hey, you know, this first game, if we can win, we're still in this. This next game, if we can win, we're still in this. And, you know, maybe we immediately then fall apart once the Dodgers go and face somebody else after they're here, but we have a chance to stop them right here. We weren't sure we'd even have that by the time we got there. And the Dodgers couldn't quite get it together well enough to make that happen either. And so we hit that last series, and all of a sudden it was one of those rivalry matches. It was the one that said, we have the chance to play all kinds of spoiler. We didn't. But we had the chance to play all kinds of spoiler, and that's really exciting. And we, you know, you with like in it, what it's, was it 2013? I think we weren't even that close.
2013 was the worst season.
2013 was like,
yeah,
right.
2013 that, was just like, well, that was the
we
most
out by
he
like,
goes down.
Right. Here, so that was 2011. And
oh, sorry, that's 2011. Yeah,
no, 2011. We actually had 86.
We wins. Actually still had a chance. Yeah,
86.
Right. 2011 was the year that we kind of watched Arizona sort of like slowly crawl and slowly crawl and slowly crawl. But 2013, it was like you just kind of ended up out of it, and you went, oh, great, okay, whatever. And this season really like. It was a roller coaster at the end, not in a great way. Like it was a roller coaster that was gradually on a downswing, but there was a lot of excitement and there was a lot of engagement and there was a lot of stuff happening. And that at least it says to me, like, it was fun. It wasn't good. I didn't necessarily like it. You know, it was one of those kinds of fun where you finish afterwards and you go, well, we're never doing that again, but all right. But it was still exciting almost all the way up to the last week. And that's not bad.
Sure. I'll take away from this season that I had a lot of fun with you guys at that one game that we won that one time. And
I guess that happened.
Yeah. And kind of a season of saying goodbye. You know, like it's not an end of an era at all. And yet we're going to lose.
It's a changing
of the
guard,
biggest
though,
names
for sure.
We've had on this team for the last bunch of years. So like, likely Timmy's not going to ever be a part of the Giants anymore. Likely, well, definitely Affeldt's not going to be a part of the Giants anymore. Hudson's a guy who just came along but made a big impact. Maybe Matt Cain is no longer a guy who's going to be a major part of our rotation, and that's weird too. And you know, a lot of these like kind of names, and you think, of course, like Panda's now gone. You know, Pagan is entering his last season. Who knows where he's really going to be? It's like this huge changeover where we still have like one of the sickest infields you're ever going to find, I think. Mm-hmm. It's just weird that we're saying goodbye to so many people and that you can't really look at it as like some end of an era, but an end of a lot of individual eras, right? Like a lot of guys are going away next year. And that puts the Giants in a weird spot where, yes, it's sad we're saying goodbye, but it's also like, to me, this is like end of stuff, huge opportunity for maybe the first time in a long time where we got, what is it, $40 million coming off of the books, which we that hasn't been the story. That hasn't been the story for the Giants, even in the years we didn't win. We didn't get to the playoffs, like, you know, which is all the odd years. But in those years, we didn't come into the next season. We didn't come into those next seasons with the opportunity to reload the way we are going to get to this time. And you know, to me, that's like what this season is. It's like it's a season that just friggin' happened. And I'll remember some stuff. I'll remember some fun games. I'll remember some plays. I'll remember, like, you know, Madison Bumgarner pinch hitting and getting a hit and all that kind of crap. I'll remember all that stuff. And I'll remember us going to that game and winning, which was awesome. Yeah, exactly. Like, all that stuff, some great things. But I'm also going to just remember, like, yeah, that was, like, the year that we lost this guy for good, essentially. You know, and there's going to be like four of those guys. So it's kind of weird, but I'm just, I think at the end, it's just like, you know, I'm ready for this one to be done. And I think I was ready for this one to be done like 2 months ago.
That's the way we felt it was heading. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. It got weird, man, because, you know, I always watch the games, like regardless, you know? But it got to a point where I was finding myself less inclined to make sure I caught the game. And not necessarily that I just like didn't care, but if I missed it, it wasn't like I wasn't like worried about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And usually if I miss the Giants game, I'm worried about it. I don't want people to tell me what happened. I'm going to come home and watch it later. Maybe like it's this year also happened where there's like a big transition going on in my life too. So like I'm a little swept up in that, but I think it had more to do with just the way this season was. The season just felt like it wasn't going to happen a long time ago.
there were a couple of those winning streaks where we were just like, wait, okay, maybe for a second. Oh, yeah,
every now and then you got a little glimmer of hope, but for the most part, I was pretty resigned to our fate.
In a way, yeah. Yeah.
In like June, like I don't know, and it was a weird thing how that happened. But that's kind of how it went. So let's shift gears here because I want to hear now, like our good takeaways and how what like we look for next season. And I think Chad, you were talking about that too. Like you wanted to hear ideas for. So I mean, what did you want to hear from us about next season?
Yeah, I just want to hear from you guys. What do you think the Giants need to do? Number one priority. I mean, I know they have several things that might need to fix, but if you had, I don't know, let's say...
So we could make one move, maybe? Yeah, like, we get the general manager one move.
$25, $30 million a year for 5 or 6 year contract.
Mm-hmm.
What's your number one priority? Because I know there's going to be several things that they're going to do, but what do you want to do?
Go ahead, Ben.
Start. I have the feeling I know what Willie's going to say, so I'm going to pick something slightly different.
All right.
Just because I can. But I'm actually going to go with outfield because we're not in a position where Pagan is going to really be much. Pagan is Angel Pagan at this point. And he has done a lot, which has been great. He is not doing a lot, and you have to acknowledge that. So, I mean, if you're going to, you know, figure out what's the big splash that you can make, you get somebody who's going to play every day, who's going to get in there and give the offense an additional chance to get moving and be that spark that Hunter Pence has been in the past. So you get Pence back in right field in theory. You get possibly an awkward Blanco and Tomlinson platoon in center, and you need something solid in left. Not necessarily as solid of a defender, but like somebody who is a more consistent hitter than Mike Morris. Who can stand out there and like if like where you go the defense is shaky but man he makes up for it as opposed to the defense is shaky I think maybe this isn't a great idea somebody who isn't going to get substituted in the seventh for a defensive replacement unless it's an emergency.
I'm with you on that, but I think right now our biggest question mark is the starting rotation. I feel like we could kind of plug like what Ben said. I don't think that's a guy that's going to be incredibly difficult to find. That guy's out there somewhere, but for me it's like the guys that aren't out there somewhere that are really hard to get and find. Well, they're not hard to find, but they're hard to get. Is someone who can basically be your number two to Bumgarner. And so obviously the talk is David Price and Zach Greinke. I'm partial to Greinke because of the fact that we get to steal him away from the Dodgers. And for a long time, I feel like the Giants are the team getting stolen from, and the Dodgers are the team doing the stealing. So it'd be nice to feel like we're on the other end of that for once. So that's pretty much. I mean, I say that's the first priority. Go out, get yourself a Greinke. If Greinke's not the guy, get yourself David Price. But you get one of those guys. You don't miss out on both of those guys, and you don't get the you don't go out and you get a third and fourth starter from you know some random team. That's how we've been doing it.
Pretend that they add up to one starter, right?
That's how we've been doing it for way too long. And it's time to switch that up and go, look, we're a big market team. We should be getting big market talent. Yes, we got really lucky, and maybe it was all skill, but we got really lucky with our farm system getting some of these guys and being a very homegrown team. But that's not going to last forever, and at some point we do need to make a freaking move. I'm really glad that they're starting to do this stuff with some international talent. Which
they just signed a number one prospect outfielder, 20-year-old. Yeah.
So he won't be ready for a few years, but that's a step in the right direction.
No, neither will Carvinal, and same sort of thing. But I do agree with that. I mean, I think that the starting rotation is a gaping hole right now, and it's something that could be filled if you can really build a solid 1-2 and get something to kind of firm up around that, as opposed to saying let's have a solid one and then like try to get like four third starters in a row to try and. You know, there's something to be said for team morale on knowing there's a guy that's going to win and then another guy that's going to win. But I mean, it's hard for me personally as somebody who generally has liked the three teams he's been on. It's hard for me to look at the free agent list and not like lust after Yoenis Cespedes.
Okay,
so that's good because Cespedes is at least a plus defender with a plus arm and a. You know, like how many pluses can I fit onto this tiny business card bat? And so it's hard not to feel like there's an everyday impact that you get from slotting that kind of player in if you're going to shoot big. Like I'm not saying like let's go get Alex Rios. Like I'm you know if you're going to do something let's massive to try and plug a hole, let's never say Alex Rios. Even though Timmy's might be leaving, and then we're at least safe from that. But. Cespedes, if you're going to look at the market right now and say there's somebody out there that you want, Hayward's not bad, but if you're looking to make sure that you're getting like pretty elite defense, elite arm, absolutely like above elite insane bat, you want a Cespedes. Bam. That's
all right. The only thing I've heard about him is that he's potentially like a guy who doesn't do well in a clubhouse, but I don't know that for sure. So
Maybe I don't feel like I've seen major rumors with him the way that you kind of see them swirl about various players, but that may just be the teams he's been with have really good.
I also think though it's hard not to fit in with the Giants clubhouse because they already like the core of that clubhouse is there, and I feel like they're just gonna welcome in whoever and it's gonna be fine. You know what I mean? Like I don't know. I feel
like you'd have to be like Yasiel Puig to not work with
you. Got to be a real shithole to like not. Do well in the Giants clubhouse.
Willie, stop repeating me.
Chad, who do you think the Giants should go for? I'm curious to hear what your take is on this.
Well, you know what? The Giants led the National League in average this year, which is crazy.
Sure.
That just like we're not used to seeing that.
So that sounds like you're saying we don't need hitters.
No hitters are required.
We got hitters, you guys.
So, yeah, if I had just one check to write, I mean, it's got to be for one of the big-time pitchers. You know, I agree with you, Willie. I think we need to go for Greinke because it's addition by subtraction. But
sure.
Regardless of that, I think David Price, one thing that I noted today was really interesting. A lot of these big-time aces, their velocity drops over the years. And that's just a normal thing. We've seen it happen all over the board. Mm-hmm. He came into the league in 2008, and his velocity has not dropped at all, not even by more than 1 mile per hour. Mm. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, and
Price has always kind of has been very impressive over a sustained amount of time, which is one of those like
injury history is good.
Yeah, kind of like what Verlander had been up until like a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing that you have to be concerned about, Greinke is a fantastic pitcher. Cueto is good. You know, Zimmerman is good. All these guys are good, but...
Oof, Zimmerman. I'd almost forgotten about him. He's going to fly under the radar a little bit because of the other two.
He might. And I
think that could work to our advantage, too, honestly.
The one good thing is that because this is the best bumper crop of free agent pitchers in many, many, many years, it's going to drive their collective prices down. It's not going to be like, there's only a John Lester available this year. There's multiple John Lesters available. So I think that works too. Well, it works to everybody's advantage, but at the same time, the Giants don't have to overpay because if they lose a negotiating battle to a team for whomever, they might have two or three fallback guys that are going to be a few million a year less. So
I've got a question for you in that area. Do you see that causing the ones that are seen as the tip of the bumper crop to sort of – to have them turn into a bidding war, but drive down prices for nearly everyone else because there's so many of them to sort of have like the top like three or top four, you know, like just looking at the list right now. I mean, I'm pretty much seeing, you know, the ones we've already mentioned, Greinke, Price, Zimmerman, maybe Hisashi Iwakuma, maybe. And I feel like they sort of lean up very rapidly, whereas everybody else on that list is somewhere between like high two to, you know, like low three, high four. And you're looking at like everybody from like Mike Leake to Rick Porcello on and off to Jeremy Guthrie on and not really anymore. No, I take back what I said about Guthrie. That's an old habit. It's an old habit to look back and then, oh, Jeremy Guthrie. But to look at like some of the people on that list and say, but these people here, Doug Pfister, even, for example, and I'm not saying we should sign, like, if we're going to aim, we should absolutely aim high. But there is something to be said for some of these other guys, like potentially that pushes Mike Leake's overall asking price down a bit. And if he's willing to do the, like, you know, incumbent team discount a little bit and re-sign with the Giants, that might help the overall market for us in that area, you know. Yeah. Or it's like, do you, like, that's kind of how I sort of look at that and go, everybody fights over, like, whoever signs Price, Greinke asks more. Whoever signs Greinke, Zimmerman asks more. Whoever signs Zimmerman, Price asks more. But then, like, those three, it gets ridiculous enough with those negotiations that, like, somebody like Scott Kazmir kind of looks around and goes, man, I better not try and get too ridiculous with this.
Well, the good news is that Mike Leake has already extended his, his attraction.
He's made the interest clear.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and the Giants have made their I think, interest in discussing clear.
But Mike Leake is not the answer. It could be part of the answer. It's not the answer. So
Mike Leake is one of those, like, let's get a line of threes to back these guys up and have, like, a really overall excellent rotation. But he's not the, like, well, after Bumgarner comes Leake, and, man, we're going to be all right guy.
Yeah, no. They need to get one of those big-name guys. Even year, baby.
Yep, even year. Big pickup. All right, let's wrap this up. Why are we going to win it all? Stars off. Ben? Next year. Sorry. Why are we going to win it all next year?
Why are we going to win it all
this year? Because they restructure the playoffs based on standings from May.
Turns out there was an accounting error. The Giants are in.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, based on the Clubhouse Chemistry Award, you're getting the third wild card. I think that when scholars of baseball look back on this Giants run, because I think looking at other teams that we still talk about today, like we're not a murderer's row and we're not like a, you know, Maddox, Smoltz, Hudson, because we've been spaced out with it. Like those guys have been that good, but one at a time over 5 years. But I think that history is going to look back at this crop of Giants and they're going to say Buster Posey, Brandon Belt, Joe Panik, Brandon Crawford, Matt Duffy made one of the most incredible infields that baseball has seen at a homegrown level that has grown up together and worked together like this for ages. And I think that if anything is going to take us to winning next year, it's going to be that crew, you know, maybe with like Kelby Tomlinson lurking at the background or Sergio Romo on the outskirts, or, you know, that's a couple of the other just homegrown guys that have made that tight nucleus that everyone else has locked into really well. I think you look back at, say, the 2016 season, perhaps when the Giants win their fourth World Series in 7 years, and you say it is about the pitching, it is about guys like Bumgarner, who also fits that same, you know, came up from the ground up, built here kind of thing. But it's that homegrown nucleus, I think.
All right, so the infield. I agree. I think the infield is fantastic. And I think, you know, we're going to keep these guys all for a really long time, and that's a big deal. So I think that's a fantastic way to look at it, because this is not going to be replicated by another team anytime soon, for sure.
And not like this. So. They all started here, and they're all damn good.
Yep, hell yeah. All right, Chad, what you got?
So beside the even year thing, which we are all thinking about, we have Hunter Pence coming back for two-thirds of a year that he missed this year. That's like signing two-thirds of a really good free agent outfielder.
There you go. Yeah, this is like 2014 or 2012 Hunter Pence.
Yeah. Right?
But hey, I mean, leave the other third in the car.
You know, that's pretty awesome, to be honest. Yeah. I think Matt Cain's going to bounce back. I think Matt Cain is going to have a good year this year or next year. He's not going to have his problems that he had in 2015. I think he's going to recover from his injury fully.
Do you like that prediction?
Do you think Matt Cain bounces back to a 1 or a 3?
To a 1 or a 3?
To a 4. To a 4.
What do you mean?
To like, do you think that Matt Cain bounces back to ace level, or that Matt Cain bounces back to extremely competent? Like,
I think three.
Rotation one three. Or three. Sorry,
three. Yeah, rotation three. That's what I. Yeah, 3.5.
I actually think he's four. I think Mike Leake is three, and yeah, we have a two.
Could be.
I'll take that. That makes sense.
I think the Giants will sign a preeminent free agent starting pitcher. I don't know if it's going to be David Price or
Zach Greinke, maybe.
Or Zach Greinke or Jordan Zimmermann or what have you. But I think that the 1-2 punch of a Mike Leake and one of those guys with Matt Cain and Madison Bumgarner and whomever else is going to be starting, be it, you know, let's just say our fifth starter is going to be okay. I think that it's going to be fantastic. I think the Giants are going to do well. And I think if they have the budget to sign the outfielder that they need, they're not going to get a Yoenis Cespedes if they sign that number one starter. But I think if they get just one more person with outfield depth, I think if Pagan comes back, he's going to be healthy. Oh, wait, no, never mind. That's not going to happen.
Next.
I think if Joe Panik's back is going to be somewhat durable for the year.
I think I'm looking at Joe Panik more than I'm looking at.
And that's going to be a big issue. I read an article today. You know, all the doctors are like, oh, this is a common injury. He's going to be fine. It's not going to be an issue. But the Giants seem to have this curse of the second baseman back injury. Okay, so I'm not going to believe it until I see it. So, but assuming he's going to be okay, you know, the Giants really, if they avoid the injury bug next year, I mean, look at that. They were decimated this year, absolutely decimated, and they still won 84 games.
Yep. Had a chance at the end, so that's crazy.
When it rained, it really poured this year. And
so
yet,
if you add the possibility of having a little to no injured staff next year, well, there's always injuries, but a less injured staff next year, plus you add maybe another outfielder, not a preeminent one, but you do add a first stringer ace to the club. How can you not predict that's going to be a 92, 93, 94 win team from 84? I mean, that's easy. That's only 7-8 wins.
Well, it's funny. You're not even talking about like a Dodgers, you know, buyout or like a Padres, like grab all the things, take the toys and go home.
So I think
that's like three acquisitions.
I think the Giants know what they're doing. Bobby Evans, you know, they had their press conference today and they're absolutely in those negotiations with Mike Leake. They're starting them right now. And they said absolutely we're in the game. We're in the hunt for a number one ace on the free agent market because they knew exactly what they're getting into. Last year, they did put a really good offer into John Lester, very comparable to what the Cubs put in. But he ended up going with the Cubs because of the whole Midwest thing and the family and what have you. But the Giants have already admitted that they knew that John Lester was one of the only free agents last year that was worth putting that bid in for. And they knew that 2015 offseason was going to be the year that they had a shot at getting a starter.
I'm going to go with the fact that lightning doesn't strike twice. And the Giants had one of the worst injury seasons you're ever going to see, and it's just not going to happen again. Because that's just not how it works.
So you're going to bring your anti-snake venom?
Yeah, no, it's just like historically when you see a team have a season like the Giants had this year with just on the injury front, nothing else. Just talking about injuries. When you look at teams historically, they don't often happen twice. It's like it's just like one of those things where you're not going to roll, if you roll like a one on a die, the chances are very unlikely you're going to roll the one again. Like you're probably going to roll one of the other five numbers. And I'm just playing the odds here. I think the Giants are going to have most of their people for most of the season. They're going to have the normal number of injuries next season. Maybe they get lucky and they have one of those crazy years where no one gets injured. Could be. But I think likely they just are going to have better luck than they had this year. And the team is actually really good. We just didn't get to see the team play. So that was pretty crap.
We got to see the backup team play, and they were pretty great.
All right.
Yeah.
So right,
Chad guys, just called Kelby, me out.
Kelby
on Twitter,
Tomlinson
but,
is why, guys.
But the fact is, I just can't even open the game. That's the problem I'm having.
Okay,
so, like, I'm trying to open it up to look at something, Chad.
I know. So right before we sign off, I'm going to ask you two questions.
Sure.
Number one, who do you want to win? Who are you pulling for? And number two, who do you think will win?
All right.
Willie.
I want the Cubs to win. Just because I think that's some crazy shit that no one expects. And I think that the Cardinals will win.
Ben.
Cardinals are just the best team. Yeah. Like, they just are.
God damn it, Willie. Stop taking my damn answers.
Well, I mean, that's the right
But answer. It's true. The Cubs are the best storyline. The Cardinals are a 100-win team, and they face the NL wild card. I mean, in fairness, that what comes out of their own division. So the Cardinals will be facing a 90-win, like a way above 90-win team throughout the playoffs no matter what, but I don't see the Mets or Dodgers as having a better chance.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay, so we did not discuss these picks before. I just sprung the question on them, but I know this sounds weird, but I'm going to mirror their answers only because the Cubs have been since 1908. I feel sorry for them.
If anybody's been listening to this podcast, it's not surprising at all.
I know. Well, it's not. No, come on. 1908, man. I mean, right. they've suffered long enough. They've done a great job putting together a great team, and I think Joe Maddon's done a great job. He would be a great manager for the Giants if Bochy had retired or what have you. As far as the overall pick, I'm not going with the Cardinals because they have 100 wins, though. I'm going with the Cardinals because the alternation of the Giants and the Cardinals winning the National League pennant since 2010. So you had 2010 Giants, 2011 Cardinals, and they also won the World Series. 2012 Giants, 2013 Cardinals lost to the Red Sox. 2014 Giants, so ergo must be the Cardinals.
So do they have to win it this year to kind of like so they get their kind of odd years?
They have to win the National League pennant.
But I mean, if they get to the World Series, like, so they won it, then they lost it, but they got to the World Series. So now I think they have to win the World Series again, and then the Giants go in 2016.
Oh, I see.
And then in 2017, the Cardinals get back and lose it.
You're going with that pattern.
2018, the Giants win it again, then the Cardinals get back and win it. Yeah,
right. I would submit to you that if they made the World Series but lost it, I would still say that's a really good omen for the Giants. But
yeah.
If they were to make the World Series and actually win the World Series and continue their pattern, then that's even a better omen. So,
yeah.
Yes.
All right.
Good things.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for episode number 98. We were missing Eric tonight. He was feeling a little under the weather, so I hope he feels better. And we'll see him for episode 99. And we're going to be doing some off-season episodes, but you know how things go for TorchCast. It's going to slow down a little bit in the off-season because we're, you know, We have an off season as well. That's
we're watching
the way
basketball.
Of the world. Yeah, that's the way. Yeah, we're gonna
Didn't
go watch
an off season last year. That was awesome.
it's awfully short last year. Weird. I know,
right. So look out for the next episode of TorchCast. Thanks everybody for listening to this one. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. We are at TorchCast. You can follow each one of us individually. I am at Willie Dills. Ben is at Fred Duck, and Chad is at ChadK21. And Eric is at Two Out Hits. And check us out on Facebook. YouTube, all the places. Torchcast.com is the actual blog, so you can go there as well. For Eric just wrote an article recently that was kind of a wrap up of the season as well. So it's really good. I want everyone to go check that out. So thanks everybody. I want to thank the Giants subreddit for being so supportive of us this year and pimp their podcast because they actually now have a podcast of their own. But they actually linked us in their sidebar. So we are now linked in the sidebar of the Giants subreddit, which is really nice of them. So
we're official now.
Yeah, thanks to those guys. They said check out TorchCast, an RSF Giants endorsed podcast. That's very cool of them. So hope to get to hang out with some of those guys again next season. And you know, definitely check out their podcast. It's really good. They're all huge Giants fans and really smart about that. And that is a great community too. So if you don't know about that, you're not over there checking it out. There's a game day thread and all that stuff. It's just, I think there's going to be like threads throughout the offseason. It just is one of those things now. It's a community of people who just want to talk to each other. So I encourage everyone to check that out. And we'll see you next time for episode number 99. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TorchCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TorchCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TorchCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.